Just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you on a Tuesday afternoon. Another edition of Smith and Jones coming your way. And a jam-packed next hour as we will hook up with Alvin Williams in about 5-10 minutes' time. And also later on this hour, we shift our attention from basketball to baseball as, unfortunately, the Raptors are out. We discussed that quite a bit yesterday, and we'll talk more about it with Alvin Williams. But all eyes in Toronto, at least, now focus solely on the Toronto Blue Jays. As, you know, the Leafs, it was quite a while ago that they were knocked out. Now the Raptors are sidelined. Argo's not playing. NFL action going on, and maybe some eyes, at least in this part, on the Buffalo Bills, a little bit of close proximity to the border. But the one game in town that a lot of folks certainly want to keep an eye on is the Toronto Blue Jays and the pursuit of the postseason. And it looks like a foregone conclusion that the Jays will be in the playoffs in this expanded format this year. And Jonesy will get into it with Ben later on, but my fingers are crossed that this isn't a one-year, one-time thing. You know, I've been trumpeting this for years, and I hope that baseball ultimately goes this way and has the expanded postseason for years, for decades to come.
I'm with you, Eric. Can't tell you how much more excitement it gives. I mean, you know, back in the day, was there anything worse than, well, I was going to say September baseball, let's say mid-August baseball, when your team, there's only one team that wins a division and you're 21 games out, under 500 in fifth place. I mean, the only reason why some people would go to the ball yard is to see a good team who might make the playoffs. And, you know, not that that team in this current incarnation is still going to have a chance, but the expanded playoffs makes some of those September games, you know, late August games, it makes them more important. And, you know, the big deal was if your team was out of it, who's coming in with the September call-ups and to see how a kid plays. And even that is not, you know, that's not something that you can hang your hat on that transfers over to the next year. So I'm with you. Expand the playoffs, especially in a time when you're looking to make more money in terms of revenue. It'll fill stadiums, parking lots. People will buy hats and T-shirts and caps. So I'm with you. I love the expanded format, and boy, I hope they keep it.
Well, and heading into action tonight, the Jays are the fifth seed in the American League. So you look at the AL postseason seeds, the Jays enter action tonight, again, in the fifth seed, sitting with a 26-20 record and a huge series coming up here against the New York Yankees. First pitch going tonight right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan as Walker takes to the mound for the Jays. Again, first pitch coming just after 7 o'clock. We'll talk later on again to Ben Wagner, voice of the Jays here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He and Mike Wilner will have the call, and we'll discuss tonight's game, but also just kind of big picture in general, the last few weeks of the baseball season as we get set towards the Major League Baseball playoffs. News out of Raptorland, we obviously will discuss Game 7 of the Clippers and Nuggets. But news out of Raptorland with the contract extension for Nick Nurse and Jonesy. We can't take credit for this. I'm sure this was in the works for quite some time, and it was obviously a foregone conclusion, an absolute no-brainer that this would happen and this would get done. But we were just talking about this yesterday.
Yes.
When I mentioned in the question to Doug Smith, everybody talking about Fred VanVleet, Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, Chris Boucher, and more, and those are all worthy discussions to have. But I said, are we forgetting about the fact Nick Nurse and Masai Ujiri? And here we are less than 24 hours later, a contract extension for Nick Nurse.
Well, I had an interesting phone call with an executive from another team, just kind of chit-chatting, and he said, hey, isn't Nurse in an option year? And I kind of said, yep. He said, don't worry, that'll get done. And that was last night. So I don't know, maybe he knew something, but it's good. Look, we talked about this yesterday with Doug. Keeping that championship window open, you build, you know, all of this. Eric, think about years ago when the Raptors were done on April 17th, and we were trekking down to the arena for pre-draft workouts, and we were focused on the lottery. And one of the big nights for Raptor fans was that halftime show when they did the draft lottery. Where are they picking? Who might they get? And then the workouts ramp up and all of that. And look at how far you've come. You've come from that building for the future to now being a, well, for the last couple of years, a perennial, a championship contender. And I think it's at times one of the most overrated things, building for the future, because at some point the future becomes the present. And the Raptors did it right. They built, they developed guys. They were able to trade some of those guys they developed for better players. They were able to use some of those guys they developed to help get them to a championship. And in building, unlike other teams, they built and they won, E. They made their run and they won a chip. Now, how long can you keep the window open? And bringing back Nurse, and as we talked about yesterday with Doug, having a lineup with Kyle, Pascal, OG, Norm, a Terrence Davis, you know, some of these guys that are still around from the championship, it's not a bad thing. It really isn't a bad thing. So you bring the coach back, you try to keep that window open, because there are some people, some teams that build like that, and they have a few shots at the championship, and then the salary blows up in their face, and they can't do anything, and they have no choice but to say, okay, let's back the truck up, back down the hill, and try to reload and push the cart up the hill again, and they have won a chip. At least if you're Toronto, you've won a championship, and that's good and bad, because you look at a guy like Fred, you look at a guy like Serge, I mean, they might come back to have a chance to win. And the bad part of that is they've already got their rings. They've won. So does their mentality say, yeah, I can come back here and try and win, but hey, man, I got a ring. I need some money. Especially, a player like Fred, who is really due for a big payday and hasn't had one yet. So, and you got to believe his loyalty is somewhat still to Toronto, who gave him an opportunity, signed him to a big deal then, and he's played his way into a bigger one. You would think that he would give them kind of the first right, but bringing Nick back is a huge part of that and the stability that goes with it all.
Jonesy, I don't mean to speak for you, but I think I do, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here when I say that we're just the broadcasters. We call the games. We don't have inside information here. I don't want to, pretend like I'm speaking on behalf of the organization. But I would assume that the next in line, the coach is done. Now, whether it's, whomever it may be, whether it's up to the board, whether it's, the folks from Rogers and Bell and Larry Tannenbaum getting together, whomever it may be, next in line has got to be Masai Ujiri. And I would assume that everybody wants Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster back in terms of contract extensions for both of those gentlemen. I would guess the only way that one or both of those guys aren't back is if they don't want to be back for whatever reason, and I've never had any indication that that's the case. So I would assume that both of these gentlemen are next, certainly with due respect to Bobby, Masai Ujiri being the top priority, because every guest we've had on, anybody we've talked to, when you talk about the culture of the Raptors, it's not just the culture that comes from the players or from the fans or from the coaching staff or from the organization overall. It's the trickle-down effect where a lot of people say it starts with Masai at the top and goes from there. Masai and Bobby are credited with the way that this culture has formed over the last X number of years, where they are as important to the overall umbrella of the Toronto Raptors as any other kind of branch on that tree I just spoke of.
Well, where does it come from? It comes from the top, and starts with ownership, your front office, the decision-making, are we going to pay tax? How much are we going to spend on this guy? All of those things. And, Masai, Bobby, right in the mix with the board. And then you bring your coach in, and that filters down to your players. So you would hope that in order to keep the window open, you get these things done quickly.
Well, we'll talk more about the contract extension for Nick Nurse and much more related to the Raptors and the NBA postseason as, again, we get set for Game 7 between the Los Angeles Clippers and Denver Nuggets, as we bring into the conversation longtime NBA, of course, longtime Toronto Raptor, and analyst now with Sportsnet, Alvin Williams. Al, thanks again for the time, as always.
What's up, guys? How are you?
All good, Al.
Doing well, Al. And you know what? I got to hit you with something right off the bat. And Jonesy, we're going to bring you into the mix because I know you were a part of Basketball Central. You did other segments on the show, but you didn't ever take part in Swish or Brick, something that Alvin and I did every week with Danielle Michaud. Now, I don't know if you saw the tweet yet, Al, but Danielle sent out a tweet about 45 minutes or so ago. This is moments like this that I desperately miss, Swish or Brick, with Alvin Williams and Eric Smith. Charles Oakley and his opening. Did you see it, Al? Have you seen the highlights? Have you been on YouTube? Did you see any of Oak on Dancing with the Stars last night?
I did. I got a video sent to me early this morning, and there was a couple friends showed me and shared last night. I guess performance by Oak. Yeah, I did see it.
All right, so come on, Al. Swish or Brick?
Hey, man, what you trying to get me beat up or what? What you trying to do around here? I'm going to give it a swish.
Yeah, I know you are.
And that's all.
You don't want to get beat
up. That's
all
I'm going to say. I'm going to give it a, I'm gonna give it a swish.
Hey.
Swish all net.
Hey, any big man that plays basketball that can move in any way and goes on Dancing with the Stars and puts himself out there, I don't care what he looks like, that's a swish.
Yeah, man. I mean, just to have that heart, like I couldn't do it myself. And I think I'm pretty light on my feet, but I wouldn't be able to do it. No heart for that.
Man, I listen, all the way around, 3 for 3, I am not going to sit here and give a guy a brick for putting himself out there on national television in front of millions of people when I don't even know if I would do it in front of 5 people in the room that I know all 5 of them. I mean, I don't have 2 left feet. I have no feet when it comes to dancing. So I'm not going to sit here and rip another man's dancing skills, good, bad, or otherwise. I give him full credit, and Vernon Davis out there as well. I watched 5-10 minutes of it last night as flipping through the channels and caught Vernon Davis live. And then I had to go back and watch Oak. And it's definitely making the rounds today. But good on Oak. Good on Oak for having the guts to do it. Having the guts to do it. Al, we'll move on from that and obviously talk some actual basketball. And before we get to on the court, the business of basketball, and the business of basketball as it relates to the Toronto Raptors, a complete no-brainer, obviously, that you've got Nick Nurse signed to a contract extension. And Al, we were saying right before that you came on the air with us, now that Nick Nurse is signed up, I've got to imagine that ownership, the Board of Governors with MLSE, they've got to be, you know, doing everything I would assume imaginable to make sure that they lock up Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster as well.
Yeah, I mean, that it goes in what we've been talking about a long time on the radio, off air, and everything. When you're forming what you call a winner and an elite franchise, the stability, the consistency has to be there, right? And what the Raptors have and MLSE have developed and created over time is something that you have to mention in the breadth of the past 5 to 7, 8 years as one of the top franchises, I believe, from top to bottom, whether it's the players, management, ownership, and everything. So you continue that. You want to continue that. You want to keep it strong. But the foundation is there now. And once again, I think they're going about it the right way by extending your coach and now your management. And now you got to look at the players and see where you're going to go in the future.
Yeah, I think that's the next step, Al, but I agree with you in terms of the stability. Al, I want to ask you, go back to Game 7, because we had somebody tweeted in and asked us about it, and it was kind of 3-4 days ago, so Eric and I really didn't get into it, but the last play or the last few plays, I mean, the Raptors did a great job defensively holding Boston without a score, without a basket, for 4:51, and they had some turnovers in there, but they were down 3, it was 90-87, and they bring it down, and Fred has a contested 3 that doesn't make it to the rim. And, you know, I got into a discussion with one of my buddies who's, I'll admit, I'm not trying to throw him under the bus, but he's a bit of a newbie. And he said, oh, you know, like, you got to work that around and get a 3. I said, no, you didn't necessarily have to get a 3. Boston was 1 of 4 on their last 4 free throw attempts between Tatum and Grant Williams. If you take the quick 2 and you foul, they might help you out, miss 1, both. Even if they make 2, now you got to have the 3. My own philosophy was, I don't really go for the 3 unless I have to. Or if they're falling asleep and I can get it in a surprise by running them something good. But, I mean, I know that's philosophical, but just your thoughts, Al. And you were a guy that had your hands on the ball in situations like that.
Mm-hmm. In that position, you're absolutely right. You go for the quick score because you know it's a two-possession game regardless, right? You're going to get another opportunity if you make it or you miss and you have to foul. Or whatever the case may be, to get that ball back. But to what you look at, what you see is an example of today's game. Today's game is not I won't say it's not a thinking man's game or a strategy. It's more of a system, and it's more of a style of play that's conducive to everybody to make a decision. And where it was back in the day where your point guard, and this goes with the value of Kyle, because I think it would be a total different possession if someone like Kyle was there, if Kyle was in that game at that juncture. But this game is taught to play a certain way. And when it comes to strategy, you start seeing a lot of three-point shots. And we've talked about it, Josie, as well.
Yeah.
You don't need a three in that position. Let's keep attacking. Let's keep going to the same play until they stop it. Like, that strategy is out the window now. It's more of an autonomy, or it's a type of offense where everyone has the same ability to make that decision or type of play. And I think that's where some offenses get bogged down. Some offenses become unpredictable because certain players have the right and the freedom to do whatever they like to do at that position. Because at that point, you get the quick basket, you go for the best shot available, and then you foul and get the ball back, and then you go for broke. And I think that's how you play that game out.
Al, do you think in today's game there is more, I don't know if trust is the right word, there's more leeway, there's more leash for the players than there was even in your day, let alone if we go back how many years and talk about the coach truly being the one calling the shots, oftentimes the dictator. Do you think that there's more freelance opportunities and more leeway now for players today?
Oh, for sure. For sure, man. I mean, and accountability isn't there as much, right? If you're not shooting well, for instance, if you're 1-for-8, 1-for-9, and guys are still shooting three-point shots, that was just something that was so different back then. Like, you could not do it. And you had to be a three-point shooter in order to take a three. Everyone's not shooting three. In order for you to be considered a three-point shooter, your percentages would have to be high, or that had to be your reputation. But it's just a different game, and it's a catch-and-react game. So your players have three jobs to do. You pass it, shoot it, or drive it, right? There's no reading the situation as much. You still have players that do that, of course, but it's a 0.5 possession league now. It's a 0.5. As soon as you get the ball, you do something with it. Pass it, drive it, or shoot it. And now players do not have to read. They do not have to see who's the hot man. They don't have to see where's the mismatch. They don't have to see certain opportunities that, you know, traditionally we had to do back in the day. So it's more of a free-flowing game. It's a more of an equal opportunity game where it wasn't like that in the past.
Al, let me ask you to that point. Do you think that's what's hurting the Clippers? I mean, the fact that it's kind of free-flowing and there's all these possessions. They're up 16. They lose the game. I mean, we know now a 19-20-point lead in today's NBA, that's like a 10-point lead or 8-point lead back in the day, because everybody's firing threes. Everybody gets their hands on the ball, and it's I wouldn't say it's like pickup, but as you said, there's a lot more freedom and the way the game dictates play, you can catch up in a heartbeat. But if you think about the talent that the Clippers have versus the talent that Denver has, you get up 16, 18, 19, you start milking the clock, going inside, basically dialing back the pace of the game and the possessions. How do you give up that lead? How do you give up not one, but two leads like that with the talent you have?
That's exactly what you just said. It's the strategy is not there. It's not, you know, we're going to start the game out doing this. Are we going to start the quarter out doing this? And then we get that lead. This is our bread and butter set. These are our bread and butter plays. It's not the two-man game where it would be back in the day, the two best players that have the ball in their hands and they're the decision makers, right? And then it comes down to the other side where defense is not a priority. Although Clippers are known or look like on paper they have some defensive guys, defense is still not a priority to get a stop because I'm coming right back and shooting the ball. So it's all about multiple possessions. But the possessions they're not valued, right? They're not valued. They're not cherished. And that was always the biggest thing, and that was always the pressure back in the day in the playoffs again, and keep comparing the two eras. Every possession meant so much. That's why you see the games 85-89 and, you know, bogged down and the fouls and all those type of things, not that many turnovers. And today's game, once again, as you see the Clippers, it could be Lou Williams taking a shot. It could be Morris taking a shot. It could be Kawhi Leonard taking a shot. It could be Paul George taking a shot. And not just shots, three-pointers early in the shot clock. And once that starts to happen, now your defense isn't there, so now you're giving the other team opportunity. With the other team is a very good offensive team as well. So with that being said, there's no more management. The management of the game is not there by one player. And we saw it last year with Kawhi Leonard. The luxury the Raptors had, you could give him the ball, and it was like giving Michael Jordan the ball. It was like giving Shaq the ball. He would get to his strong point, and he would shoot a very high percentage from that position, and that held the Raptors at many times to manage the game, if not take leads when their games were close. But that's what the Clippers are missing with that type of player, because Kawhi Leonard sometimes doesn't even have the ball in his hand at certain junctures of the game.
Speaking with Alvin Williams, NBA veteran and current analyst with Sportsnet, Game 1 between the Heat and Celtics goes at 6:30 Eastern tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern, Game 7, Denver and the Clippers. Al, I wanted to continue to look forward here and talk about the conference finals and maybe the NBA finals, but I'm going to go back here based on something you just mentioned. You're talking about valuing the ball and valuing possessions specifically. Maybe the simple answer, Al, is anything can happen in one game in one night, and it's just one of those things. But when you've got two solid point guards, two very good ball handlers in Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, and a team that traditionally over the course of not just this season but the last number of seasons has valued the ball and valued possessions as much as the Raptors have, limited turnovers, can you explain how in Game 7 they had 18 turnovers and gave up 31 points off turnovers, which was more than a third of Boston's points?
Yeah, careless basketball. That's all you can attribute it to. But you can also say Boston defense played great defense. And once again, managing a game, looking at possessions, risk versus reward. And, you know, you hate to be a player that's hesitant and not aggressive. But there are situations where, you know what, I do not try to make this play on the first rotation or the first reversal. You want to have the ball pop, make the defense move a little bit, make people off balance, make people out of position, and then you attack. Because Game 7, I don't care what series you're in, unless it's just a fluke where there's going to be a blowout, everyone knows. Everyone's on tilt. Everyone has their focus, and you're not going to be able to just do anything. You're not going to be able to dribble through two people. You're not going to be able to penetrate, leave your feet, and kick it out, hoping somebody's around the three-point area without Boston reacting. If you notice, Boston got so many steals that way just because they hovered around a three-point area expecting a kickout. And you think that's not talked about on film? That's talked about. That's a game plan. That's a strategy. And if you're a player, just like we talk about boxing as well, Jonesy, you know what I have to do. Maybe I have to do this to make you react to that and then come back to something. Where's my strength? So, once again, it's managing. And then on top of that, when you are a ball handler, when you are a big part of the game and as far as the offensive side, you make sure you're making these right decisions. You're making sure you see the game or a couple plays, two or three plays before it actually happened. And you have to be ready to attack that way. You can't always be on go and expect that the outcome is going to be, you know, the way you want it to be. And a lot of times as fans and people from the outside, we only look at the result. So somebody could make a bonehead play, but the ball will go in and we'll excuse it. Whereas I don't care what it is, that was a bad play. Don't do that play again, because you're going to pay for it at some point. So it's just the way the game, once again, is played, but it's their approach as well.
Al, it's funny because we had Eric and I had last week a couple of well-respected writers, and I guess it's philosophical, as you said, the way the game's played. And, you know, I was talking about the Raptors taking tough shots, and the counter, the retort was, well, Boston makes you do that. Well, you know what? If I'm getting a little bit of penetration and pitching the ball and it's moving and you get it back inside, you're going to get a layup, or you're going to, as you said, pitch it out for an open three. But you've got to move the ball first to start all that. And I just think sometimes, I mean, that you're right. The defense is good, but you make the defense look good when you try to go on the first shot, when you haven't swung the ball, when you haven't moved people, when you haven't screened. And that defense looks impenetrable because you're allowing it to stand there. And in that same vein, Al, I think Miami has a great shot against Boston because some of their three-point shooters, those guys put the ball on the floor the same way the Raptor guys did. Raptors just didn't make shots, but Miami's got some guys that can make shots.
Yeah, no, for sure, at a high level. And they, once again, they have a structure. That's going to be another great series. And the fact that the Raptors, it came down to a series where the Raptors and Boston were, it was so evenly matched, and they had similar styles of play. And it came down to Game 7, just like in 2001, man, like us in the Sixers. It just came down to a Game 7 last shot, and that's all you can ask for, right? Just the team, you may be better than a team, but on that particular night, they were a second or what possession before better than us. And that's what that Raptors series came down. And we can look at it and say, they should have did this, they should have did that. And, of course, and once again, it's the result. Because there's so many times where I was looking at Freddie, like, come on, man, don't shoot that. And then he would make the three. But then I'm like, damn, but I know what that's going to look like later on. And right. Then, you know, it'd be a game where he'll make three or four of those things, but it just wasn't a good shot. But once again, it's so you got to adjust to the style of play now where these players do, that's how they're playing, the three-point shot, off the dribble, in transition, off the offensive rebound, things like that. And unfortunately enough, Boston just outplayed the Raptors, you know, at the end of that game. That play by Marcus Smart, man, where, you know, how he adjusted when – Norm Powell was coming at him. Game 6, when Norm Powell ran up his chest and laid him up and pretty much closed the game and got the and one. And then Game 7, it was an identical play, but he let Norm go past him a little bit and recovered. That's another adjustment that players make day in and day out. That's why teams are winning. That was a winning play from what happened in Game 6. The result of Game 6 made that block in Game 7 happen. So it's just one of those things. But to your point, I know I went off on a tangent, but yeah, Miami definitely has a great opportunity to win that series.
Al, in closing here, maybe, you know, I don't know if I'm speaking on behalf of all three of us. I don't think Denver's winning tonight. I think you've given full marks for coming back in the series. I think, you know, in spite of everything we talked about, the Clips, I think they get it done tonight. But let's just, for argument's sake, say whether it's the Nuggets, whether it's the Clippers, whether it's the Lakers, does Boston or Miami have a chance against the West in the finals?
I definitely believe so. I believe the game, the way it's played, and the two teams from Miami to Boston, they have some very talented players. They have very talented players. When you look at Bam Adebayo and you look at Jimmy Butler, as I think I would consider them the most talented players on Miami. And then you look at somebody like a Tatum, and you look at Jaylen Brown and Kemba Walker, man, those are players that can win a game, and not alone win a game, those teams can win a series. So I believe they definitely have a good chance of winning it all if they get to that point.
Al, listen, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for joining us. We'll look forward to talking again next week, if not before. Stay safe and healthy, man.
Awesome, man. See you guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Al. Talk to you soon.
There is Alvin Williams, NBA veteran and, of course, analyst with Sportsnet, as we get set for Game 1 between the Celtics and Heat. Too bad it's not us. Jones is getting set to call the action. 6:30 Game 1, Miami and Boston, and then Game 7, 9 o'clock Eastern, Denver and the Los Angeles Clippers, as the Nuggets try for a second straight round, a second straight series to come back from down 3-1. Can they do it to the Clippers? Well, speaking of the postseason, we shift our attention from the NBA postseason to the upcoming Major League Baseball playoffs, and a team that looks like they're locked into a slot, whether it's a wild card or whether it be an actual seed. They're the fifth seed right now, and they're getting set for a big series with first pitch going tonight just after 7 o'clock. It's the Toronto Blue Jays and the New York Yankees and the Jays in the postseason as we speak. We will talk about the Jays and more when Ben Wagner joins us next on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. First pitch goes just after 7 o'clock tonight as it's a huge series. Fairly late in the season here with only 14 games remaining for the Jays, coming in 6 games above 500 at 26-20. Walker against Garcia. Jays and Yankees, and part of the duo that will call the action tonight, Wilner and Wagner on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Wagner joining us today. Ben, thanks for the time.
Yeah, of course.
Ben, admittedly, listen, I've been watching as a fan. I've been watching even through the glass at the studios, watching you and Mike do your thing in commercial breaks and at halftime of Raptor games. But Jonesy and I have been solely focused on the Raptors, and now, of course, with them being eliminated, all of my attention goes into the Toronto Blue Jays. So I'm not going to say what have we missed, because I've been still keeping up as a fan. But how have the Jays been able to keep this together with all of the injuries, with everything that's gone wrong this season in terms of, you know, going into Buffalo and dealing with the stadium and not having the stadium ready and having to be on the road, and as I say, then dealing with the injuries, and then of course roster turnover and change with so many solid moves, albeit made at the trade deadline and everything else? How did they keep it together?
Well, with all those things that you just rattled off, the one thing that was consistent, they never made an excuse about the hand that they were dealt, whether it had to go all the way back to July with the federal government and then a modified quarantine where they were living in the hotel for 3 weeks, getting ready through summer camp, the uncertainty of where they would land, never an excuse made by the Toronto Blue Jays along the way. And I think that kind of atmosphere is a reason that nobody panicked. Nobody got too concerned when they were a little slow out of the gate offensively. You were trying to figure out where the pitching would come from and where they would be built up, where they would find some consistency in the starting rotation. But the reason now for the long-term success, in my mind, has to be a tremendous bullpen where you don't have starters going 6 and 7 innings at all. I mean, to get even the guy that you would expect to go 6 innings in Hyun-Jin Ryu, that's not even happening very frequently at all. So you're going to rely on a bullpen not only to get significant outs, but to get the biggest outs of every ball game from the 6th all the way through the 9th. And no matter who Charlie Montoyo and P. Walker have tapped into those situations, they have been able to go out there and get it done. And it's the veterans and surprise guys like Anthony Bass or Rafael Dolis, who's got a boatload of experience pitching professionally, or the new guys that you had no idea what you were going to get out of Thomas Hatch and Julian Merriweather. And those guys are doing it with multiple inning outings, or they're just going out and they're going 1, 2, 3 to close up wins.
Ben, I guess my thing is, and you know, you and Eric just rattled off a bunch of stuff we talked about when we first came on the air, all those unknowns and great resiliency and adaptability by the Jays and the whole organization to put them where they are now. Here's my question though. How far ahead of schedule do you think they are, where some of the preseason spring training plans might have been? And does that change the expectations going forward? Like, we know, we've seen it in basketball, Eric and I, where the Raptors out in the first round, swept 1 year, and then boom, the next year the conference finals, and people are going, oh, next year it's the finals. Hold on a second here. We know it's not linear. So where are the Jays on this curve, and does the fact that they could be sitting with the 4th best record in terms of the playoffs, does that change the timetable or dangerously change expectations?
Well, I think it's a dangerous change in terms of expectations. And those expectations actually go all the way back to spring training in February, where the younger core said that they wanted to shock some people and really... I think the quote from Rowdy Tellez was crush people's post-game celebrations and crush the dreams when 162 was still on the table. Now then, in an accelerated season out of summer camp, they continued to raise the question of where they could be. could they even exceed their own expectations with the expanded playoffs and get into the playoffs? I still think that there are a number of things that this team must address. And to do that, you can't go in this offseason and just change all those scenarios. They know they have to improve their starting rotation still. They have to get a power bat somewhere on a corner. They have to improve their offense and their defense in the outfield in some capacity. And probably that starts with a true center fielder. So how aggressive are you going to be with guys that are in free agency? So you look at those pieces, those significant pieces, that's going to take some time. And I think it's going to take probably 2 years. So have things been accelerated in terms of a timeline or expectations for this year? Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's fun. It's exciting. It's a young team. And in a lot of ways, they are overachieving. But for the long haul, like you said, you just don't get to the playoffs this year and expect to be a front runner the next year and so on. You continuously have to build and address needs. And those are the things that will have, you know, long-term success if you're able to do that. But I still think overall, the window is 2 years away from really lining this thing up, because you need the guys that are already here to have some experience too and find out who they are.
You know, the crazy thing as well, I guess, Ben, when you look at it, the Jays are only 3.5 back. Now, granted, there's not a ton of time left, but you're only 3.5 back of the top spot in the East overall as well. How much right now do you think the Jays are just concerned about playing well, playing the right way going into these final 14 games, as opposed to trying to chase down that number one slot? Do you know what I mean? Like, are they kind of going in saying, Ben, we're pretty much, not guaranteed, but we're pretty confident we're going to have a playoff spot. Let's now just make sure whatever seed it is, whatever slot it is, we're playing the right way.
Yeah, it's easy to look at the standings and think that there's this carrot kind of dangling out in front of the nose, right? I don't think that's the way the Blue Jays are approaching it. Charlie Montoyo has said repeatedly, we're trying to take it one game at a time because they have to. they have to, and especially the last couple of weeks with the injury situation, now they're forced to and look at matchups and do a deeper dive of who can maneuver defensively and how versatile Kevin Biggio can be as well. Those are the things, you know, that are of grave concern. Not necessarily worried about what the Tampa Bay Rays are doing or what the New York Yankees are doing, and they've completely turned it around since that 10-run inning in Buffalo the other night. They're worried about themselves. They're worried about making sure that they've got the right pieces going into every game, let alone every series, and they have to play smarter baseball. They have made way too many mistakes on the bases. They have let some innings early in ball games affect how their bullpen is handled, and then that affects 2 and 3 days afterwards. So they are trying to meticulously go through each and every day, and there's enough going on in Blue Jays land that they can't concern themselves about any other team at any other point.
Ben, do you think, with that being said, do you think other teams look at the Jays and their success and say, well, shortened season, they really do have some holes, and this is kind of a one-off? Or is it, hey, just be aware of these guys because they might be confident, and if they make a few moves, they could be building something. What do you think the perception is, especially for some of the top teams in looking at the Blue Jays?
I know the perception is the Toronto Blue Jays are going to be a problem, and they're going to be a problem in years to come for a long time because of the significant pieces that they've, one, brought in, or two, grown. And I think that's only going to get magnified in this year and then in next year, because you're starting to see the reward of the prospects that were in the mid to lower levels the last few years starting to work their way up. And I already mentioned Julian Merriweather and Thomas Hatch. We're on the cusp of perhaps seeing a guy like Patrick Murphy. Maybe TJ Zoik has turned it around. You know, I've got reports out of Rochester that he's throwing the baseball really well, and he was just, you know, given this little bit of a toe dip into the water of Major League life last year. Those are the kind of things that set up franchises for sustainable success. And for the years to come, if you look at how the Blue Jays are now constructing that 40-man, let alone the 26 to 28, if we get to the postseason, right? If you look at that, those are raising eyes in media circles and people that are asked their opinion a lot about how to project successful franchises. And you just talk to people in baseball, scouts, coaches that I've come across. They're obviously very aware of what this kind of young core and this young team overall is doing while they're bursting on the scene here, given this 60-game sprint.
Speaking with Ben Wagner, voice of the Jays here on Sportsnet 590 The Van. He and Mike Wilner will call the game tonight just after 7 o'clock, first pitch with the Jays and the New York Yankees. Ben, I wouldn't, as a fan, I wouldn't trade what happened 4 years ago and 5 years ago, respectively. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I like the fact that Alex Anthopoulos went all in. The Jays had a hell of a team on paper in both of those years, and I think they had a legit chance, and I'm not the only one, obviously, that thinks that, had a legit chance to go to the World Series in both of those seasons if we play the whole woulda, coulda, shoulda game. I thought they were going to be there. Whether they would have won, I don't know, but I thought they were right there and could have ultimately, you know, been in the dance. All that said, the cupboard was left very bare. But when the cupboard was left bare, all I've heard, and I've never met, actually, no, I lie. I have met Mark Shapiro, but I've never interviewed him and never talked to him for more than 30 seconds. I've never met or interviewed Ross Atkins. But all I've heard for the last 4 or 5 years is the hate and the animosity and the vitriol at those two guys specifically, because they're not making moves, or they're not making the right moves, they're not doing anything, and the Jays are spinning their wheels, and they're running in quicksand, da-da-da-da, as opposed to what you just said moments ago. Look at the way that they've stockpiled the picks and the players and the prospects and where they stand now. How much credit should those two get as opposed to the heat they were taking over the last X number of years?
I think they should get a lot of the credit for doing that, because even when there were pieces available over the last couple of years for packages or looking to improve certain things, they were worried about what would be in that proverbial cupboard. You know, how bare do you want to leave things stripped down? You know, we've all went over to the fridge, opened it up, and we see about 17 things in the fridge, but there's still nothing to eat, right? There's nothing to really have there, to go out and make the meal. That's what the Blue Jays have been able to do. They've had their whiffs. They've had definite whiffs in the last couple of years, and they made some deals for, like, J-Hap, right? Billy McKinney and Brandon Drury are no longer part of the equation. It took some time for the clock to run out on those guys. That just wasn't it. But, you know, J-Hap wasn't exactly, you know, the guy that was going to be leaned on to be a number one. It was a deal that was clearly, at the time, the best deal that they could have made. Other guys in a package, you know, that they could have kicked the tires on, maybe the cost was too much and it would have left the system too depleted. So they have elected to kind of sidestep that. Again, continue the trek, get guys experience, get guys moving forward. And because of that, now you're reaping the benefits of that. And you've got options. Last year, there were no options because guys weren't ready. And the guys that were in the major leagues were overexposed. And now, at least, you're seeing some of that reward for the patience. And especially, the credit goes into that clubhouse, too, for the guys that have been through the wars the last couple of years to go through it, to get to this wild season, get to a trade deadline that arrived a month into it, essentially, and a ball club that went from let's see what happens to now in conjunction with what was happening in the clubhouse, on the field, with the front office, to let's make it happen and let's really go after this thing. And that's why you get deals that really didn't cost that much, and you took a flyer. It was a very low risk and high reward opportunity for a guy like tonight, Taijuan Walker. Yeah, he could be a number two starter in the playoffs. And then Robbie Ray continues to make improvements from where he was in Arizona, just in his two trips through the rotation with the Blue Jays now. So it's not only the stockpile that you've got with the young guys that are coming up and having immediate success and really kind of blossoming in front of our eyes, but it's also the guys that have been through the wars before that are also turning the corner. And that credit goes to not only Mark and Ross, but a number of people in baseball operations that have to invest the time, be on the same page, have their voice heard, and get deals done.
Ben, we appreciate the time today. Look forward to chatting as we get closer to the postseason and even into the postseason. Enjoy the broadcast tonight.
Certainly will. It's going to be a couple of fun weeks for Blue Jay fans, no doubt.
Thanks, there is Ben Wagner, the voice of the Jays here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He and Mike Wilner, and the two of them will have the call tonight just after 7 o'clock. First pitch, the Jays and Yankees. We'll take the break. Come back with more on Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now, more Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back on Smith and Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Just a couple of minutes left before we turn it over to the boys for Baseball Central. Jonesy, right before we hit the air today, I sent out a picture on Twitter that I had a chance to try the new Popeye's chicken sandwich today, which, by the way, was solid. Very good. And I know you like to partake in the chicken sandwich. But then as I'm eating my chicken sandwich, I'm scrolling through, and you're making me look bad. Even though it was 5 hours ago, I didn't see the picture. But you're sitting down with a very healthy bowl of cereal and a very worthy venture promotion that you're involved with Kellogg's.
Yeah, I've been involved with this before. It's the Better Days program, and with the impact of COVID-19, there are a lot of families taking it on the chin, people out of work, and, you know, the stats were 1 in 4 kids go to school hungry without proper nutrition to start their day. Because of the impact of COVID-19, it's up to 1 in 3. And Kellogg's has a great program where you buy a couple of boxes, there's a coupon, and then money gets donated to the hunger partners, people trying to help eradicate this. And I know when I was at a school in Richmond Hill, when I first moved from TDSB to York Region, that school started a breakfast program, and the difference that it made for kids to be able to get something to eat before they started their day was amazing. So, I mean, we do it as adults. I mean, Eric, how many times you and I on the road, we're rushing to the 10 o'clock shoot around, but even at risk of being late for the shoot around, like, we stop and we grab something to eat just to put something in our stomachs, because you need that. And, you know, the kids need it too. So if you're so inclined, Eric, thanks for the shout out here. Check out social, check out Kellogg's.ca. It's a great program.
All right, Jonesy, we appreciate that. And certainly a worthy cause, as I mentioned, and I wanted to make sure that we made note of it as well. Want to thank our guests on the show today, Alvin Williams and Ben Wagner. Baseball Central comes up next. Thanks for tuning in to Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.